Live from Burlington, Iowa, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of room and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Robin Johnson, Steve Hexum, Rob Sussman, and our program tonight coming to you from the studios of KBUR in Burlington, Iowa, a Pritchard Broadcasting station overlooking the mighty Mississippi River, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And, of course, you can join us on the World Wide Web all over the world, beyondthebeltway.com. And, again, we are delighted to be back in the great Hawkeye State on the eve of a very historic election. No one knows at this moment who the next president of the United States is going to be. Nobody really knows who the nominees of the two great political parties are going to be. And again, there's been so much talk and analysis and hype and everything else for almost about 8 or 9 months now. And again, in about 24 hours, people will begin to go to the caucuses and cast the real first important votes in campaign 2016. And we've got great guests with us on KBUR this evening. And Steve Hexum, I'm going to begin with you. You're the program director. You do a morning host. You've been here. You hosted us in 2004.
Right.
So it's nice to be back here. Give us the brief difference between the way the Republicans will caucus tomorrow and the Democrats will caucus tomorrow.
Well, the biggest difference between the two parties is the Republicans will have a caucus, and they'll have a caucus where they will have a chance to talk a little bit about the candidates. For a short bit, each candidate will have a chance, or a representative of the candidates will have a chance at every precinct to try and gather in and sell their candidate. And then you will vote, but you will vote on a piece of paper, and it will be a secret ballot. You'll vote, you'll fold it in half, and you'll put it into a ballot box.
The old-fashioned American secret ballot.
The old-fashioned secret ballot.
Now, what about
yes.
the Democrats?
The Democrats will be completely different. The Democrats will basically be asking for people who supports this candidate. There are only three candidates on the Democratic side, and they'll ask for who's supporting Hillary Clinton. Stand up and raise your hand. Who's supporting Bernie Sanders? Stand up and raise your hand. Who's supporting Martin O'Malley? Stand up and raise your hand.
And if one of those, if you don't get 15%
at any one of the precincts,
at any one time,
yes.
then that person is out.
That person, then the people who are supporting that person then have to decide if they're going to support one of the other candidates. And which one of those candidates they go to is critical in a very close election.
Robin Johnson also joins us. He teaches at Monmouth College in Illinois, but also hosts Talking Politics. He's sort of the walking encyclopedia of politics here in this region of the great state of Iowa. What is your take on whether or not Iowans are really up to speed on what's going to happen tomorrow night, the different process. Does everybody know what Steve has just explained?
I think most people that participate do, but I think there could be a large number of first-time caucus goers mm-hmm. who are being educated about this process, and those are people that have been recruited and are actively supporting candidates like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, the outside candidates, the insurgent candidates, and it's a huge effort to get people mobilized to show up. This isn't just going and voting. This is spending some time there, and so it's different. And so the number of first-time caucus goers ranges. It can be as much as 40%. President Obama was very successful in getting first-time caucus goers out in 2008, but it's not easy, and that's going to be the big indicator of who's going to win tomorrow.
If we added up all the people that vote tomorrow, what would the number be? Any guesstimate?
I think here's my estimate. The Obama race brought out about 240,000 votes. That was an outlier in 2008.
That's a big number.
My guess is in 2004 it was about 125,000. My guess is it's higher than that, 150, 175. If it goes a lot higher, that means Bernie Sanders is going to have a good night. The Republican turnout – has been fairly stable, right around 120,000 in the last two competitive races. So I think that'll be a little bit higher, and the higher it is, if it gets up to 130, 140, that means Donald Trump will probably have a good night.
Rob Sussman is the news director, also a co-host of the morning show along with Steve Hexham. Insofar as the way the candidates have worked just this particular region, explain to those around the country exactly where Burlington is and who's been spending the most time here.
Well, Burlington is in southeast Iowa, bordering Illinois to our east and Missouri to our south.
And you're about 5 minutes from Illinois.
Literally right across the bridge
right.
from the station here. Mm-hmm. And the candidates that are spending the most time, and I'd say that the process here really started probably in April of this year when we had our first candidate showing up and visiting.
Mm-hmm.
That was Rand Paul. He has not been back to Burlington since. However, certain candidates have been hitting the area very, very hard, particularly Martin O'Malley has been here the most. He has 5 visits under his belt in southeast Iowa, mm-hmm. Within Des Moines County, which is where we are right now, and the immediate surrounding border counties. Other candidates who have been here a lot, Rick Santorum has been here several times. We had a few of the other ones, Ted Cruz has been in the area at least twice. A few of the candidates have made southeast Iowa a priority.
Is this region considered the more conservative region of the state?
This is one of the more liberal areas of the state. Yes, this is a very blue-collar union Democrat sort of area. And that is it affects the local elections, and it affects the whole.
How would that affect who comes out to vote in the Republican caucus tomorrow? Because it's sort of a blue-collar Democratic area. Does it help Trump?
It could. It could. This area, his Ron Paul did very well down in Lee County, which is mm-hmm. south of here in Fort Madison, a couple elections ago. So this area seems to attract some of the more Tea Party-type candidates historically as well. Up and down the river, Mississippi River, from Dubuque to the Quad Cities, Clinton, this is all mostly Democratic counties out here. But there is a Republican presence, and it tends to be a little more, I think, conservative than the middle of the state.
And if you go directly to Henry County, which is a bordering county, they are very much a Republican county. They, mm-hmm. So you know, there is we call Iowa a purple state, and there is a reason why we call Iowa a purple state, because people do switch back and forth between being a Republican and being a Democrat, and that is really a key here.
And everybody has read ad nauseum for the last week is that so many Iowa voters make up their mind at not only the last moment, they may make up their mind as they're walking to the caucus.
Or in the caucus.
Well,
the caucus.
Rick Santorum was making this point when he was in town just last week. He was saying that 30% of people who decided to vote for him in 2012 decided at the caucus to vote for Rick Santorum.
At that particular moment, though, and I'm going to ask the question, and then we're going to wait until after the commercial break to get your answer. But who is the second choice to more people in this state? Because it would seem to me that if you're the second choice, you're on that teeter-totter. You could be going the other way. And I want to find out who is the second choice, both from Democrats and Republicans, as they head to the caucus tomorrow night in the great state of Iowa. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8029, taking America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border, and now around the world on the World Wide Web at beyondthebeltway.com.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce DuMont back at KBUR Radio this evening, and we are talking coast to coast and border to border on Beyond the Beltway. And again, before the break, I asked Robin Johnson, who is at the moment everybody's sort of second choice, because if they're teeter-tottering going to the caucus tomorrow night, who's ever in second place might pull a surprise.
It seems like the Cruz and Rubio supporters are both Cruz and Rubio seem to be the second choice of most voters according to the polls at this mm-hmm. point. That's what we're seeing on the Democratic side. Of course, it's pretty much Sanders and Clinton mm-hmm. back and forth.
And tomorrow night is not the end of the process. Explain to us.
Well, this is just the first step of the process. This is critical. They have precinct caucuses tomorrow night, and then they will have county conventions where delegates will be elected there. Then they go to the district, congressional district. There's four of them in Iowa. And then they go to the state convention. In the past, especially in the Republican side, the results of the precinct caucuses weren't necessarily binding. Now they are. So this will be the first of a multi-step process to elect delegates to the national convention.
So when someone, let's say a caucus winner on the Republican side tomorrow night, let's say in Des Moines County, which is where we are. So how many delegates will be selected from them when they go to the convention? And how are the actual delegates selected? You come up with a number.
Right.
Of delegates, but you don't know who those delegates are, correct?
Correct.
That's sort of a backroom deal at the state convention.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And it'll be proportional as they work their way up
mm-hmm.
So that everywhere is represented. And that's what's critical about campaigns having organization everywhere in the state and not just the big population center.
Steve, this to those listening around the country and maybe around the world, this sounds like a very, very complex process. Is it too complex or is it good for the country?
It's really the reason why Iowa is number one in the nation. Iowa is the first presidential test. The Iowa caucuses are the first presidential test, and a lot of people would like to see that change. But the reason that they are the first is because of the rules that go back to 1972 that said you had to give 30 days before you could have a caucus. And after you had your caucus, then you would have to have your schedule or county convention, which you had to give enough notice for that. Then you would have to have your district convention, and then it had to be ahead of the state convention. So by the time you did all of the back timing, Iowa had to be early. And then all of a sudden, after Jimmy Carter made his big splash, so to speak, and used the Iowa caucuses to basically build a real campaign in 1976, that's where it all of a sudden became a huge thing. And in fact, at that time, that was where both parties jumped on the bandwagon.
And the only guy that screwed it up was Tom Harkin when he ran, because nobody came here because he took a lot of business out of the state.
Yeah, and obviously
people forgiving him for that.
This is the most disparate, the biggest chasm between the two parties that I have seen in all of my history of covering caucuses and covering.
A higher percentage of evangelicals and how many percent of avowed socialists?
What you have is an
alarming number.
Actually, the question is, how big is the evangelical vote right now? It seems, and Rob, we were talking about this on the talk show, and that is that it seems that there is a lesser. Bob Vanderplatz, host of the Iowa Freedom Coalition,
he was beaten up by Donald Trump.
Trump, and it seems that maybe there's a lesser factor.
And that's interesting to note, because the candidates that Bob Vanderplatz endorsed in 2008 and 2012 went on to win the caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And if Donald Trump were to be to pull this out, that would be saying quite a bit, and I'm not sure exactly what that would mean for from Bob Vanderplatz. I wouldn't be the one to comment on that, but it would probably be a very serious situation.
But the back and forth on that, I mean, for those that haven't followed it, literally it's going on right now, our Twitter war, is that Trump accuses Vanderplatz of endorsing Cruz because he didn't get something that he was asked for from Donald Trump, including $100,000, and it's one of these Twitter wars that's gotten everybody confused on the eve of the. Is there any? Does can anybody put any Can anybody make any decision as to who might be telling the truth in this little
it's hard to say, but it comes at the last minute. 4 years ago, 57% of Iowa caucus goers described themselves as evangelicals. So it's a lot higher percentage nationally. And then, of course, when you go to New Hampshire, there's a lot more secular voters there. So this is the field is tilted to the more conservative religious candidates.
I have said for almost 2 months, I can't imagine why this would be perceived as a strong Donald Trump state.
No one can understand.
Because of his
background. No one understands Donald Trump. He is the true enigma in the entire candidate pool. I have not been able to understand him. I don't know who can understand him. He seems to be impervious. He's bulletproof. No matter what he says, no matter what he does, he seems to gain strength.
But the other morning when you guys were doing your show,
yeah,
this was after the debate that he didn't show up at. Were your callers upset? Did they feel that they were insulted because Donald Trump didn't show up? Did they not care? I mean, what were your callers saying?
I'll tell you this. I spoke to a lady at a Rick Santorum event, and what she told me, she asked Rick Santorum about this. She said that Donald Trump sticks it to the Democrats. Those are the exact same words she used. And she kept hammering on this point. It's like, that's why we like him. That's why we like him. That's why we like him. And I think that tells something. And I heard that a lot. In fact, me and Robin were on air a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And we had a caller. And what exactly was it that she said? She said something along the lines.
Your question to me was, this is after our first poll, and you said, you asked me, why do you think Trump is doing so well? And I said, because the base is mad. And they feel that Trump is an effective voice. And right then we got a call in, and I don't know if I could say on the radio what exactly she said, but she said he's the only candidate with the cojones, more cojones to say it, tell it like it is, than the other candidates. And she hung up, and we looked at it, sure, and there's the nature of his support. This was way back in June.
And I think it still stands. Let's go to Michael listening to us on KXLY in Spokane, Washington. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. Well, you know, as we know, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, now we've discovered, has had 22 emails turned up labeled as top secret by the State Department on her unprotected email server. So where is Hillary Clinton's common sense, and where is Hillary Clinton now in the truth issue? And yes, this will be an issue in the campaign.
It may be an issue in the campaign, but I don't think it's anything that any Democrats are caring about.
I think that it may, if it does anything at all it has done is it has helped Bernie Sanders surge, because Bernie is the surging candidate right now. In fact, there's one candidate that has been a candidate that has basically captured the insurgency of the Donald Trump or insurgency of the Donald. I mean, if you talk about the Cruz and Trump and Bernie, they're very different on the issues. I mean, they're the two different polar opposites. But they're both angry, and they are capturing.
But there's also there's a lot of similarity between.
I can explain Trump because I live it. People are mad. The working class, he gets most of his support from non-college educated people, and they are mad, and they've got a right to be. I look at this from the standpoint of our global economy. We went into a globalized world 20 years ago. All the manufacturing jobs, a lot of them in these areas, are gone. Nothing replaced them other than lower wage jobs. Both administrations, in fairness, and our government has done a poor job of preparing people for this.
Pushed by Clinton with Republican fingerprints.
Absolutely,
all over.
And they're mad at both parties. One phenomenon here that'll play out if Trump hangs around, here it is. A lot of Democrats like his message. A lot of people I know in unions and Democratic voters like his message. When I interviewed him, Bruce, last week, some of the questions he gave on Chinese mercantilist policies, trade, I would have thought I was talking to a Democrat. That's why he's doing well. That's the explanation for it, and it's logical, and it makes sense.
I don't know whether you heard him on George Stephanopoulos today, but he was talking on the issue of health care. He was talking about if people are in the streets, if people don't have money, you've got to help them. You just can't let them there and die. I mean, I thought I was listening to either John Kasich or Bernie Sanders. I mean, it was one of the most progressive things that I'm saying. And this guy was painting word pictures of what people dying in the streets would be like and how he's going to stand up and make the. So I'm just saying, I said, wait, this doesn't sound like a guy who's trying to be out conservative.
That's
conservative,
why he is the enigma.
There's a little bit of every.
He is the enigma. He's the unknown.
Here's the thing, too. I saw a great description of this I read where a Sanders supporter. A couple with non-college education said that he answers questions in one sentence where other people, they're in their third sentence, you forgot what the question was.
That's right.
And this political correctness issue, which some people try to make into a racial thing, it isn't.
No.
It's plain speaking and answering questions in a way that people can understand.
Last week on the program, I was drawing the difference between the Cruz, when they were sort of defining conservatism and who was fighting for what. I said, part of this battle is it's a cultural battle. There's the Saturday night Republicans, and there's the Sunday morning Republicans. Trump represents the Saturday night Republicans who are going to the casino. They can play 16 bingo cards at the same time. They get ashes coming out of the end of their cigarettes. And then there's those that are getting up and they're going to church. And those are the Cruz people.
I would say that generally speaking, that's if you look at both of the crowds, and I'll never forget, of course, Donald Trump came to the Burlington Memorial Auditorium, and of course we covered it, and the crowd there, it was not the same crowd that you see at a Ted Cruz event.
Right.
It was the people decked out in their hats. They had their Make America Great Again hats. It was a very blue collar.
It was a cultural. There's a significant culture. When they talk about, you know, and the third wing is sort of the country club Republicans. You've got the country club Republicans. They're beside themselves. They've given all of their money and they've given it to Jeb Bush.
And,
he's going
don't
nowhere.
Don't forget his celebrity status as well.
That's numero uno. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border tonight from AM KBUR 1490 in beautiful Burlington, Iowa.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back on Beyond the Beltway from KBUR Radio in Burlington, Iowa, and we are joined now on the hotline by Rick Tyler. He is the national campaign spokesman for the Ted Cruz for President campaign. And, Rick, thank you very much for joining us tonight. One thing in politics, sort of politics 101, is you don't want to raise expectations before an election. What is the expectation that you have tomorrow for your candidate in Iowa?
Well, our expectation is that we would win or come in second. So I have pretty high expectations, actually, but I think we'll do very, very well in Iowa.
What would be the worst headline coming out of Iowa for you tomorrow night?
The worst headline coming out of Iowa tomorrow night?
Yeah, for Ted Cruz.
I'm not sure we could have gotten a worse headline already that the one register has been routinely putting on there.
So I
don't know. I anticipate that we'll do very well or we will pull out a win. So I can't imagine even the Des Moines Register would find a negative headline about that.
One last question. Iowa is always important, or weather is always important in any election. Is there anything in the weather forecast tomorrow that worries you?
Well, it'd be good if the snow didn't come. But you know what? I've traveled all over Iowa and been with Ted Cruz in many of the 99 counties that he's visited. In fact, we're at 98 counties right now. We'll be at 99 tomorrow with one last event. And one thing I've learned about the Iowans who are supporting Ted Cruz is they're just dedicated. They're they're going to show up. I have every confidence, no matter how much it snows, they will find a way to get to the caucus.
Robin Johnson has a comment for you.
Hey, Rick, thanks for coming on. My question is, I've been following this, and we did some polling, which in October showed you the Cruz campaign making its move, and I thought you were in good shape to win throughout, but do you feel like you peaked a little too soon? Where you really rose up and was leading in the polls, and then the national media is trying to portray this last week is a bad week for you. How do you feel about that?
I actually thought the week was very good. Donald Trump decided to skip the last debate. There was over 10 million viewers that he didn't get to talk to, and we did. And what they saw was, even under scrutiny and attacks by other candidates, that Ted Cruz held up very well. And I thought he had a very good debate performance. And beyond that, there's no other leading candidate has done the full Grassley and gone to 99 counties and done events at each of the counties. Our events are unbelievably well attended. I mean, we go to towns that have 2,000 people and we get 400, 500, and 600 people showing up. It's just been remarkable that the people of Iowa have come out and supported our candidates. So, given all that and our turnout operation, and we have a great candidate and the amount of time we spend here and that we've done 99 counties, I think we've done everything we could possibly do to let Iowans know that we really would like to earn their vote.
Ron Sussman.
Now, Rick, you were in Wapello the other day at Grimley Brothers Plastics. Those small towns, have you guys been hitting a lot of those small towns as of late?
We had a lot of, we've been all over the state trying to finish up the Grassley. So it's sort of a combination between small towns and large towns. So today we're in Iowa City and Davenport. Those aren't very small towns. We were in Sioux City yesterday, and we'll finish up with a big rally here in Des Moines at 9 o'clock. We also go to these very small towns, because as you know, some of the counties in the extreme south and extreme north and then the northwest are not very populated, but we wanted to get there and make sure that we earned the vote. And I'll tell you, I think Ted Cruz is probably shaking hands with more Iowa voters than anybody else, because after every event, he just insists on spending time getting to know people, listening to them face-to-face, and I don't know that many candidates have spent that kind of time, which is why it took us so long to do the 99 counties, because when you have hundreds of people show up at each of your events, and sometimes over 1,000, it just takes time.
Well, Rick, what I would say, and the same thing at Bruce and you just mentioned and you just brought on, and the fact is that Iowans take the caucuses seriously, both the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yes, they do.
And let's face it, the caucuses are always held in the wintertime. Snow, sleet, rain, freezing rain, you name it, they're going to have to deal with it. And they take a very serious role in their view of being the first place to pick where the next president is going to be coming from. And I'm saying the weather is basically not an issue. I don't care whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. So I agree with you.
Rick, a question. If you finish second tomorrow night, the national media may say that's a loss. But as I look at the calendar, you know, historically, a candidate like Ted Cruz may not do as well in New Hampshire as others. But then when you look at the rest of the season and you look at South Carolina and you go to the South where he spent a lot of time, is your firewall stronger than the firewall of any other candidate in this campaign?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, we have been the underdog in this race really ever since the beginning, and we still kind of feel like we are, and we fight like we are. We've been as low as 4% in the polls, and no one gave us a chance, and we just kept going along, and Senator Cruz's message just resonates with so many people, and particularly Iowans. But one of the things that Iowans tell us is they want to know that we don't have a single state strategy. They don't want you to just win Iowa. They want you to go on and win the nomination, and they want to be right about supporting the winner. So we have built a national campaign, and as you say, we spent a lot of time in the South, and the Southern states have a similar population to Iowa in that they are heavily populated by evangelical voters. Almost every state from South Carolina all the way to Oklahoma is 50% more evangelical. Tennessee is 70%, Oklahoma is 70%, Mississippi, Alabama is 70%, Georgia is 60%, Texas is over 50%. So somebody stacked up all these evangelical states, 11 of them, before the 15th. So So we believe that this is actually now a two-person race. It's between us and Donald Trump, and I think we have here in Iowa a superior ground game, and we've just spent more time. Donald Trump has spent one night in Iowa this entire campaign. He's been overnight here one time, and Senator Cruz has done hundreds of events and stayed here many nights all across the state.
But for your for your long term viability, though, I mean, you obviously spent a lot of money in the last couple of weeks on smashing Marco Rubio. Rubio still has got to be kicked off the ladder by you guys, doesn't he?
I would put it this way: is that we do better in a two person race, and right now it is a two person race. And when Marco Rubio is deciding to rewrite history on his position on amnesty because he did support the Gang of Eight. And talk radio, by the way, fought him all the way on that, which is why they've been correcting him when he tries to rewrite history about Gang of Eight, because they aren't fooled. They were there during Gang of Eight, and talk radio helped defeat it. And so every time they do that, talk radio corrects him, and I think it really hurts him. And his numbers, by the way, if you look at the Des Moines Register poll, were up to 16, 17, and 18% in the first few days. And then after the debate, they went down to 12 and 13. So he was really hurt by the debate in his performance, and B, that he couldn't explain why he supported amnesty, and he talks himself in circles. But Marco Rubio is just he's sort of, his campaign ends up being like an identity crisis. He doesn't know which voters he's talking to, which state he's going to win, which region he's going to go for. One day he's the establishment, the next day he's going to turn on evangelicals, and I just think he's confusing people. And so we've always been a Tea Party candidate, and then we competed strongly in the evangelical lane, and we've consolidated the Tea Party and the evangelicals and a good portion of the libertarian vote. And when you put those three coalitions together, which is really like the Reagan coalition, you can beat the establishment. And if we're hoping that Iowans will unite behind a real conservative with a proven track record and actually elect a conservative to the White House for the first time since Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, Tyler, Rick, Robin Johnson has one last final question for you.
Yeah, as you know, sure. Rick, the turnout's been right around 120,000 the last two elections. What are your models showing? Do you think the turnout's going to be significantly higher than that, and what is that going to mean for Senator Cruz?
You know, I'm not going to give you our turnout model. That's a strategic piece of information.
Come on.
But I know.
It's just the five of us.
I know you want to know. But I will say this. I do think it probably will be a record turnout. But I don't think it'll be that large. But in fact, if you looked at the Des Moines Register poll, she took over 3,000 people that she reached by phone and screened them out to about 682. That came out to about 19.9% participation. And if you extrapolate that number to the 1.2 million active Republican voters, you would get a turnout of 386,000. Now, you and I know that's not going to happen. And so when you have a celebrity on the ticket, like Arnold Schwarzenegger was, the more turnout you get, the more the celebrity tends to do well. So if the turnout is very, very high, I'll begin to worry a little bit. But I don't think it's ever going to approach 386,000. And it's probably going to be closer to the 120, but it could go to 130 and maybe even upward of there. But that would still be a remarkable and record turnout.
Rick Tyler, I thank you very much for joining us on Beyond the Beltway. I know you're very busy this evening on the eve of this historic caucus for your candidate, Ted Cruz. You are the national campaign spokesman. We thank you for joining us on Beyond the Beltway
tonight.
I'm grateful
for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks.
Well, he seems confident, but he also he sort of, when I asked to define his or success, it was first or second. I mean, he did throw the second in there. Did
well,
that
I mean,
surprise you?
There's a sort of realism you got to take with this sort of thing, or else you're just going to wake
everybody
up.
Everybody says
disappointed.
I'm going to finish first. I mean, well, I sort of admire that there was a little candor in there.
It's hard
for him to be viewed as a loser.
Sure,
no matter
but look
what
at look at look at Trump. Trump has been calling him using the birther issue with him, just like he used with Barack Obama, and it has gone nowhere. I mean, and frankly, it seems to do. I don't know whether it's had any effect on him or whether it's had any effect on Donald.
Robin teased us before we went on the air this evening. He said there could be a big surprise tomorrow. So we're going to talk about what that surprise could be when we roll on from Burlington, Iowa, from 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you for joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back and Beyond the Beltway, thank you very much for joining us, and we welcome a brand new affiliate tonight in our hometown of Chicago, Illinois. We welcome AM 560 The Answer, WIND, will now be carrying Beyond the Beltway every Sunday night. They will carry it on a delay at 10 o'clock, so if you miss it the first time around, you can catch us at 10 o'clock on The Answer, 560 WIND, and our thanks to Marcus Brown for adding it to your Sunday night listening pleasure. Let's go to Frank, listening to us on KBUR. Nice to hear from Iowa. Go ahead, Frank.
Hello. First, I'd like to give a shout-out to Steve and Rob. I listen to them every morning.
Very good. Thanks, Frank. Very highly of you.
Oh, yeah, cool.
What can we do for you?
I just want to make a couple comments, and I'd like to hear you guys hear what you guys have to say about it, and then okay. I'll hang up and listen.
Sure.
First of all, I've heard, and I read an article that said that Ted Cruz is sending out these they're kind of like a report card, and they have your neighbors' names on them, and they tell pretty much how your neighbor voted on particular issues. That's the first thing. And I'm also hearing the Cruz fella, he said something about low turnout in Iowa. He thought there'd be a low turnout, and I thought that was kind of ironic because one of my questions was, I've heard that Ted Cruz is asking people not to go out because he thinks that a lower turnout would be better for his campaign, and I'll hang up and listen. And thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. The second part doesn't make any sense. But, again, talk about the first part because, again, before we went on the air, there is a direct mail piece that is being used, I guess, around the state, and it's somewhat controversial, Robin.
Yeah, well, based on what I read, it says vote violation on the front of it. And basically, it's a tactic used in campaigns to try to stimulate turnout by shaming people and comparing their voting record with their neighbors. This has been done in other campaigns, and actually it's been researched by professors and done controlled experiments where they tried to motivate people to vote by positive means and got a little bit of a good response, but then the negative means, the shaming, worked even better. It can actually improve turnout by 5 to 6, 7%, which could be critical in a race like this. So,
well, how does it work, though? I mean, you literally, how do you, in other words, you say that your neighbor voted in a Democratic primary?
Yeah, if somebody is targeted, this takes research, but if somebody in a neighborhood where the rest of the neighbors are Republican, likely to be a supporter of your candidate, you would send them a letter saying, look, all your neighbors have voted and you haven't. Kind of shaming them to a degree to motivate them to vote. Again, they tried the positive approach. That didn't work as well.
Right, yeah.
This blew through the roof. These are done.
But they don't know how they voted. They know that they either voted or not.
This is likely to be a supporter. They wouldn't just do this to anybody. This is somebody that would, based on demographics, neighborhood, whatever, would be likely to be a supporter of that candidate.
Well, yeah, the thought is, you know, I'll show you. Show you. I'm going to go out and vote, get my score up.
Yeah.
I can see how it works.
And, you know, I think the other thing is that what we've gotten, as I was talking about the people, the door-to-door. One thing you get in Iowa more than perhaps any other state, maybe New Hampshire, and maybe why Iowa and New Hampshire are the leading edge of the candidate or leading edge of the electoral pool, is that you do have the candidates and their supporters and their surrogates coming to your door and knocking on the door and asking you to support them and to show up on Monday night. I mean, we've had from all of the candidates, basically they've been knocking on the door, driving their vans through the neighborhood, wanting to know if we're going to show up. And that's really the key.
That's why I was surprised 4 years ago, because obviously this is a big story every 4 years. But 4 years ago, the turnout was below expectations, and yet there was this big hype that, you know, all these people in Iowa, they have all this power, and they didn't seem to want to take their power and use it.
But it was a Howard Dean, but it was also the, remember Howard Dean? It was the expected preeminent favorite?
Yeah, but that
Are
was...
Are you talking 4 years
I'm
ago?
I'm talking about 4 years ago.
Four years ago. Obama was
Obama was unopposed, and the Republican turnout was about where it was the previous time.
Yeah.
Which was fairly low, wasn't it?
About 120,000.
Okay.
When we're talking about an excitement level for this thing, though.
Well, I think in 2000, but in 2008, you had a about 40%. I think it was 41% of the Iowa Democrats turned out for Obama.
Does the endorsement of the Des Moines Register mean anything in this election cycle? They endorsed Hillary Clinton and they endorsed Marco Rubio.
I think it's very, very slight. It may provide a little momentum to Rubio. The endorsements of other endorsements do matter more in primary elections than they do in general elections. Mm-hmm. So I think it what it did for Rubio was feed a perception of momentum going into the caucuses. And I think
Do you buy it?
A little. I mean, I'm one of those that questions the whole idea of momentum. But I do. It certainly doesn't hurt any. And to get a mainstream candidate like Rubio, who's competing with Bush, Kasich, and Christie, it might provide some marginal help, but not much.
You said that you think there's going to be a big surprise. Share with us, just the five of us.
I wouldn't say this is a big surprise, but I think one of the things that I've thought through, you can make the case for any of these lower candidates jumping up into third or fourth place. Mm-hmm. But I think the guy who the scenario is most likely is Rand Paul. I've been saying this from the beginning that he's built number one on his father Ron's base, who ran here several times and did fairly well in different pockets of the state. He's got a following among younger people. He's had an initiative to bring younger people to the polls, which is difficult to do. But think about it this way. His goal was to bring 10,000. If he's halfway successful, that's 5,000. That could vault him from the lower tier up into what I think one of the surprises could be he gets fourth place tomorrow. And he's got a good organization here. So if there's going to be a surprise, that's my guess. Of course,
I'm going to throw a surprise out.
Okay.
Not a prediction. It could be the other big headline coming out, and that would be that Trump and Cruz kill each other off, split a lot of votes, and that Rubio sneaks in and finishes second. Is that how off is that based on your gut?
I don't think Bruce. I think the Trump vote, if it gets out, is solid.
Okay.
And I think the Cruz vote has slipped a little, but I think it's solid. And
there won't be a split.
I don't think so. I would disagree with Steve. The weather, if it hit, would have made a difference on first time caucus goers. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I think candidates like Sanders and Trump dodged a bullet by this storm waiting to come in today.
Is the show position tomorrow then a very important position?
If
Rubio ends up as the show horse in Iowa and New Hampshire, he does have some momentum heading south.
What he will have done, Bruce, is to win the establishment lane and put pressure on Bush, Kasich, and Christie to probably get out.
Okay. Robin Johnson, Steve Hexam, and Rob Sussman, they are all joining us tonight from KBUR Radio. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv. Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Bruce Dumont continuing on KBUR, coast to coast and border to border tonight from Burlington, Iowa. And it's great to have you with us wherever you're listening from coast to coast. The phone line's open, 1-800-723-8289. In the studio, Robin Johnson and Steve Hexum and Rob Sussman. They are political fixtures here at KBUR. And joining us on the phone right now is Sam Clovis. He is the national co-chair and senior policy advisor to Donald Trump. He ran for the Iowa Senate in 2014. And Mr. Clovis, thank you for being with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
As you look at the prospects for the caucus, does Donald Trump have to win tomorrow?
Well, I don't think he has to win, but I think we're likely to win, and I think we're going to win. And I think that really changes the dynamic, because I do think that there are probably other people in the race that feel they must win in order to do that. Mr. Trump's ahead in New Hampshire at a very high level. He's ahead in South Carolina. He's ahead in Nevada. And in fact, he's ahead in almost every state poll that we have out there. So I think we're going to have a great night tomorrow night. And I think it does change the dynamic if Donald Trump wins the caucuses.
Mm-hmm. As the national co-chair and senior policy advisor to Donald Trump, let me ask a question that I think a lot of reporters would like to ask. When you have an opportunity to discuss issues and policy with Donald Trump, does he tell you what the policy is and then ask you to find a rationale for it? Or is he someone that will listen to you and other members of that committee and try to fine-tune and finesse his statement on a particular issue?
He very much listens, but he does have some, you know, definitive views. I mean, he wouldn't be where he was if he wasn't that way. Mm-hmm. But he does listen, and we do have some very, really, I think, dramatic discussions about a lot of topics, and we come to a conclusion, and really, then the next process that we go through is how to message that, and how do we get that out, and what mechanisms we use for that. I think what's interesting is Josh Rogan from Bloomberg just had an article come out today, and I think it would be interesting for people to read that, because it really gives a lot of insight into what we do in as the policy people for Mr. Trump. And I also think it dispels a lot of myths about the fact that we don't have much of a policy effort going on. In fact, it's really dynamic, and we have a lot of people that are involved. And I think the big thing for us is we want people to sit there and think, you know, that we're just a bunch of rubes with our toes in the dirt and we don't know anything. Mm-hmm. And because what it does is it reinforces the stereotype that people always have a hard time coming back to, because all of a sudden we've been at the top of the polls for 7 months. Nobody predicted that. And the fact is we're very likely to win Iowa tomorrow night. Nobody would predict that. And so we've kind of pulled this off here in a way that a lot of people are sitting there saying, well, how do they do that? Well, we do it because we know what we're doing, and we have a process, and we we very much have a plan, and I think that's what's been a lot of people have missed, because they have a stereotype of Mr. Trump in the campaign that is largely in error.
Do you think that after the first couple of states have voted either in a caucus or a primary, maybe when we get to South Carolina, maybe even post-South Carolina, before the SEC primaries, when a lot of states are going to be voting on the same night,
right.
Is Donald Trump the candidate going to shift and evolve a little bit and maybe have more detailed policy statements as opposed to just, you know, a burst of an opinion, which usually is very popular? But is he going to have a little more depth or a little more meat surrounding some of these policy suggestions that he has?
Well, I think as we go forward, of course we'll do that, because as there'll be fewer people on the stage at subsequent debates, and you get more time to deal with questions, more questions will be asked. So you're going to have more knowledge of the issues as you go forward. The other thing is, a lot of it depends on what is happening in current events. You know, if we have another Paris or another San Bernardino, the whole narrative changes, because then we're back focused on particular topics. But as we go further along, and particularly after we secure the nomination, if we get the 1236 delegate count, and it looks like we're going to be in good shape going into Cleveland, then I think you'll start to see a huge exerted effort on our part, a broadening of our message, to deal directly with the Democrats and the progressive agenda that's taken this country into the drink over the last 7 years.
Rob Sussman has a comment for you from KBUR News.
Mr. Clovis, with the dust settled now after the Fox News debate, is there anything that you think the campaign could have or should have done differently in skipping the Fox News debate?
No, I think we had a tremendous night. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, and frankly, I didn't watch it. I have not, to this moment, have not watched a single moment of that debate. And because I was intent on what Mr. Trump was doing at Drake University, we had a tremendous night. We raised over $6 million. The checks are already starting to go out, if you've seen that, to some tremendous charities here in the Iowa area. One I'm very familiar with, the Puppy Jake Foundation, which is huge. It's service dogs for veterans. And these are the kinds of things that we feel were important to do. And I think in all things, at the end of the day, I'm glad Mr. Trump made the decision. I'm glad we followed through, and I'm glad we did what we did.
Robin Johnson has a comment for you.
Sam, how you doing?
Great, Robin. How about you, bud? Good to hear from you.
I'm doing great. Hey, I just want to you need to reserve a day with me to go to the racetrack when this is over, because I still go back to our interview back in June before you had signed on to any campaigns, and you said you were excited about Donald Trump getting in the race because he was going to, and I think your quote was, drive the debate. And he's certainly done that. However, he's done it through some of his opinions or just using Twitter, different type of campaign styles. He's done that throughout this race. Do you envision, if he receives the nomination, to continue this type of campaign, focusing on Twitter statements, calling into news shows, or is he going to go in rallies, or is he going to go to more of a traditional type race that candidates have done in the past?
I don't think there's anything been traditional about this at all, Robin. And I think that, you know, a lot of people who, and I've started making these comments back when I came on board, and I just happened to be watching Anderson Cooper right now. And I remember the very first time I got interviewed by Anderson, I told him, I said, you people have to stop looking at this as a conventional campaign. This is not a conventional campaign. It will never be a conventional campaign. And we're going to continue to go out there and broaden the base of this of the electorate. I think what has happened, and I think it's fundamentally has changed the electoral map that we see going into the convention. And I think that if Mr. Trump becomes the nominee, that it will fundamentally change the electoral map of the country, because we have attracted people to this campaign who have not typically voted in the past, or people who feel disenfranchised. And so the base that we have is much broader. I think that if you typically go to a Republican rally, you see middle-aged white people there. When you go to a Donald Trump rally, it's like going to a rock concert, and you can imagine all of the different people, all of the different people of color, people of every age, people of every possible socioeconomic status. And it is just one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen. I've been following politics since I was 7 years old.
Sam, we're heading into a break, but thanks very much. Sam Clovis, National Co-Chair and Senior Policy Advisor to Donald Trump. And also, we thank you very much for being with us tonight on Beyond the Beltway from Burlington, Iowa. Bruce Dumont back, KBUR. I was just saying to Steve Hexham, before he went on there, he has this clipboard, and it's a blank sheet of paper, and you were going to take all these notes, and you were going to, and I'm looking, it's still blank.
I'm still waiting for something.
You haven't been moved by anything that's been said.
I'm waiting for the surprise. The Donald Trump enigma is still absolutely mind-boggling to me. And I think that's really the key. That's the story of this entire election so far.
How has this, because, you know, every couple of years, you know, four cycles ago or three cycles ago, it was talk radio, and then it was talk television, and then it was the internet, and it obviously is Twitter. You know, this campaign is social media has really defined much of what's happening here. What when all the pundits go home and all the delegates in Iowa have been selected, what Robin is going to be the leftover? What's coming out of this campaign in the way that people campaign in this state that is going to be different in 4 years from now?
That's the really interesting thing. Part of the story tomorrow night will be who wins, who loses, who gets their tickets punched to New Hampshire. But there have been some preconceived notions of how you campaign in Iowa. They're going to be tested. One is retail politics. Retail politics is going door to door, going out and meeting people. Trump has come in and turned that on its head by doing big rallies. I think Steve mentioned Trump has spent only one night in the state. You compare that with Ted Cruz, who's doing the full Grassley, been to all 99 counties. That's on trial here. Second, traditionally, candidates come into the state, and ethanol is the third rail. Ted Cruz is opposing ethanol
subsidies.
Jumped
on it.
Will he succeed in spite of that? And the governor, Branstad, who's a big supporter of ethanol, has come out and went after Cruz recently. The role of money, super PACs. Jeb Bush has spent, what, $40 million to no avail. He's under 5% in the polls. And I think, as Sam Clovis just said, the tactics that are being used by Trump, use of Twitter, these statements, the rallies, the calls to news shows, that could totally upend how politics has been traditionally done in Iowa.
And also one of the earlier things is, you know, when Scott Walker basically came from basically nowhere. He gave a great speech in Iowa. Suddenly he became the front runner. He had this Sunday school teacher next door, tough conservative guy, I guess spent part of his life growing up in Iowa, and he's the first one by the wayside. What happened to him?
He spent all his money. He spent all his money, and he spent it all fast, and Donald Trump hasn't had to spend any of his money. And his celebrity apprentice, I mean, he has got celebrity status that is in spades, and that celebrity status is carrying him, and he is, as I said on with you, crazy as a fox with
yes.
No pun intended.
We also have joining us now is Phil in Gurnee, Illinois. Thanks for joining us, Phil.
Hey, Phil.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, cool. I have a question for Robin.
Yes.
You mentioned a few minutes ago about the role of money in the campaigns on trial because of Donald Trump's use of free publicity. And I just wanted to know, is that more of an outlier because Trump has such star power, such celebrity power, or is he really changing the way that that political campaigns are run?
Leave it to one of my former students to ask a really, really good question. You know, Phil, this is a good question, and to be honest, I'm not sure. This is a primary race, and will anybody, a Donald Trump in the future, come along and use his tactics? I doubt it, but it could be. But I think moving forward, will he have to adapt his style in the general election? Sam Clovis just said absolutely not. So this could be the new normal of campaigning with people. But, again, not too many people fit Donald Trump's profile. So my guess is at this point that money still has a role. I think the fact that the super PACs under Bush flopped this time, maybe they were just selling a bad product. But money absolutely still has a role in campaigns. Mm. I just think because of the specific, unique profile of Trump, this one's different.
Steve Hexham.
I was going to say, we were talking about retail politics, the role of retail politics. Barack Obama in 2008 pretty much turned the retail politics on its ear with the big rallies, with the big yep. events,
and
the big shows. And that was a big change. Now we still, I think the retail politics is still going to be a factor, but it's going to be a factor depending upon who else is going to be the big celebrity. Barack Obama was the celebrity candidate in 2008. Donald Trump is a celebrity candidate in 2016.
You know what? Another part of the celebrity, obviously, he was on television, immensely popular for 15 years in a top-rated television show, and I think people would tune in every week, and they would see him hold people accountable. And, you know, he would rip them upside and down, and one person or a couple of people would get fired. I think that's part of the image of who Donald Trump is, and then you factor that in with he has said, at least to some people, some bold, outrageous things, and then there are outside events in the world that he benefits from. He will make a comment about illegal immigration, and then Kate Steinle will be murdered by someone who should have been deported in San Francisco. He'll make a comment, and then the San Bernardino incident will take place. He'll make another comment, and El Chapo will escape from a Mexican prison. He tends to be in the right place. His comments have always preceded an incident, but then he benefits from that incident.
I do. In fact, I get that from a lot of people. A lot of people who I talk to at a lot of these events, they're saying essentially the same exact thing. Yep. They're finally seeing a candidate who they feel has represents what they've felt for so long, but maybe even they didn't know quite how to express it. But Donald Trump is giving them that avenue in which they think, yes, this is the guy who finally expresses
what I believe. Donald Trump is going to be the guy to stand up to Putin. He'll be the guy to stand up to ISIS. He'll be the guy to be the strong leader. He'll be the guy to take charge. He'll be the guy to do whatever needs to be done. He's going to build a wall, and the Mexicans are going to be forced to pay for it.
And how do you know he's going to do that? Because he'll tell you.
Yeah. I think the one of the things, just insofar as image is concerned, which has kind of surprised me, because in most of the debates, Marco Rubio has either won the debate or certainly been one in the top two. He's been he looks good, he talks good, he's sharp. I think he's got a strong position. But I don't know whether it is his age or it is his youthful look. He just doesn't look like the leader of the free world. I can't picture him in sitting down with Vladimir Putin. I could picture Ted Cruz, and I could picture Donald Trump, primarily because of their stature. They're tall people. They're big, imposing people. Marco Rubio is not. Now, I think in many cases, Marco Rubio may be one of the most electable Republicans, but I think there's one piece about him is that he doesn't seem to have the intellectual gravitas. He may not have the physical gravitas to come across as a leader. Am I being too psychological here?
I think so. I mean, I see what you're saying, but I just think Rubio's the candidate that the Democrats are most afraid of for obvious reasons. And I think on the debates, my advice to candidates in debates was always, it's hard to win them. It's easy to lose them. Just don't lose them. So I'm not sure there's been a clear victor in all these debates. Probably Trump at the beginning, just because he was saying things, again, that got attention
If Rubio got into the general election, I think his strongest suit is to make the generational change. I mean, he is an aspirational guy. He is looking forward. He has that Kennedy-esque. I don't even want to say, to me, he's more Kennedy-esque than Obama-esque. He has that spirit which should go well, and I think he's the type that would do very well with women, with suburban women, because of his attractiveness and his intellect. But I don't necessarily see him as a guy that would have a great deal of appeal with blue-collar Democrats.
We'll see how he handles, though, the withering attack that Trump will lay on him when he starts becoming a threat, as Trump did to Cruz. Cruz was a threat.
What I find most interesting is that he portrays himself as the ultimate outsider. But in reality, Bruce, Donald Trump is the ultimate insider. He has utilized government to make his fortune. He's used every means and every mechanism that he possibly can to make his huge fortune.
Sam in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead, Sam.
Hi, Bruce. I love the show.
Thank you.
Always great. Such good discussions. But what I wanted to pose was the concept that I think presidents or the election of presidents and what presidents say and how they posture themselves can affect greatly things in the country. An example is when Barack Obama was about to be elected, I know because I work in the industry of dealing with wealthy people, there was an anticipation that took place of what was to come, and that affected business ventures and risk. And I think there's an anticipation that, you know, with Donald Trump of his stances. So I think foreign leaders are listening because, you know, what if this guy does what he says he's going to do? So I think posturing is almost one of the reasons for Trump's popularity, because people want that sort of representation and that sort of posturing, you know, on a global level for America.
Robin, do you agree with that?
Well, as we were talking off air, a lot of times elections are people are looking for something opposite of what you've just had. Obama was the anti-George W. Bush. George W. Bush was the anti-Clinton. Are they now looking for somebody that's the anti-Obama, that doesn't look at diplomacy first, talks tougher? Are they looking for somebody more of the profile of a George W. Bush? Mm-hmm. That could explain some of Trump's popularity as well.
Sam, we got to move on. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. Two more segments to go. Coming to you tonight live from KBUR Radio in Burlington, Iowa.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
Beyond the Beltway continues tonight from KBUR Radio in Burlington, Iowa, and Robin Johnson joins us. He hosts a show called Talking Politics a couple of times a week here on this station, and also teaches at Monmouth College. And he originally is from Chicago, Illinois. Steve Hexum joins us, longtime program director and morning host here on KBUR, and Rob Sussman, who is his co-host and also the news director of the station. Again, we've been talking politics about what is likely to happen in Burlington, Iowa, and throughout the great Hawkeye State tomorrow when Democrats and Republicans, they can flock to the caucuses. And the caucuses start at, 7 o'clock?
Caucus started at 7 o'clock, right.
7 o'clock. And when do you think we will know, Steve Hexum, when do you think we will know who the winner is of the Republicans? And we will probably know the Republicans sooner than the Democrats.
My guess is you're going to know everything by 9 o'clock, and maybe a little earlier than that, yes. I think the fact is, the fact that because the presidential preference is a part of it, what happens is the presidential preference is the first part of this, the caucus and the mm-hmm. party business, and they want people to stick around. The reason we have a caucus is they want to get people in to go to the caucuses to
right.
do the party business. But the people that are going to the caucuses, that are going to go for Trump, that are going to go for Bernie, that are going to go that have never been there before, they're going to go and do their thing and get out of there.
Do they report to the Secretary of State or to a state election board, or is everything reported to the national
what
newspaper?
What they have is they've got an app. Everybody, every precinct caucus captain has an app that will be automatically plugging in the results. And it will all be coordinated. It'll go to Des Moines first, and then go to the nation.
Yeah, it's a Microsoft developed this application
yeah.
with the Republican Party and I believe the Democrat Party, where
all of the caucus leaders are going to come together and put their results into
this
app.
So I think sooner rather than later.
You seem a little bit trepidatious.
You know, when you mentioned computers to me, I said, oh, man, I'm from Chicago. I know how you can steal elections. It seems to me that with computers, you can steal them a lot quicker and a lot easier.
Yeah, okay, so there's that little bit. We don't even think of that. We weren't even thinking
about
that.
Oh, you're so pristine. You're so pristine here.
It's got to be better than last time when they made an error.
I know. They made an error.
There's no hanging chads, I guarantee
that. Well,
and
that's actually the reason that the parties approached Microsoft for getting this reporting system in is because of the Rick Santorum debacle in 2012, right, where he really won. But as in Rick Santorum's words...
almost a week later. Yeah.
In Rick Santorum's words, he said, we didn't win at the right time.
Yeah. Looking ahead to, again, we talked earlier about what some of the surprises might be, but what about the political leadership in this state? I mean, most people, if you're politically astute, you know that the longtime Republican governor, the longest serving governor in the history of the United States, Terry Branstad, is immensely popular here. Charles Grassley, Senator Ernst, Jenny Ernst, a new senator, relatively new senator. Where are they coming down in these races, Robin?
Well, so far they're all staying out of it. And I thought the most interesting thing was Governor Branstad, who's obviously a political genius, whether you like him or not, with that type of longevity. I kept looking for clues. There was some talk that he favored Chris Christie, who came in as head of the Republican Governors Association, to help him. Mm-hmm. Christie just never took off here. But Branstad has people, former staff people, with just about every campaign you run into. So his tentacles are into almost all these campaigns. He did make a pretty big move for him when he went after Ted Cruz on the ethanol issue here recently.
He said Ted Cruz was bad for Iowa.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's pretty strong.
On that, and his son heads up the group that oversees the pro ethanol political action committee here, which has been advertising on TV.
Which Ted Cruz has made that point that his son is a lobbyist.
Now, significantly, Senator Ernst appeared with Senator Rubio here recently, and Senator Grassley appeared with Donald Trump. So it seems to they're at least gave a little bit of an endorsement to Trump, not an endorsement, but just an acceptance.
A wink and a nod?
Yes, of the establishment.
And Sarah Palin, she's not from Iowa, but again, she made a big splash last week.
Yes, she endorsed Donald Trump. And I heard a lot of people making fun and all this, but she is still very, very popular with a lot of the working class vote, especially working class women. It was a great coup for Trump to get that endorsement over Ted Cruz.
And I will say this, we've got a major ethanol plant right here in Burlington. We've got a major wind turbine manufacturer just south of Burlington. Renewable energy and the campaign. We've heard how many times have we heard that spot running about the renewable energy?
I don't even want to even make a guess.
But wouldn't that be then the absolute kiss of death? But it doesn't seem to be with those that support Ted Cruz.
I think that...
Is it a profile in courage?
What it is... Well, actually, I think some people might take it that way. Because the ad that Cruz is running, right, and obviously the take that he has on it is that he was brave enough to come to Iowa and say no to ethanol, and then in the words of the commercial, like any good conservative should. And so I think that that's at least what he's hoping is he's going to get out of this, is Iowans being like, yeah, you know what, maybe he did stand up to all the establishment Republicans and say no to this. I think that's what he's hoping.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Donald Trump has said nothing because he knows exactly when to say something and when not to say something. And I think that's a key. He knows
what to say. And a position on ethanol is not likely to get him
in
the lead story.
Not likely to happen. Nope.
That's true. Donald Trump taking a position on ethanol is not going to be a headline.
But the profile, the interesting thing that could happen, though, is that if some people view that as a profile in courage, and he takes that to Iowa, as governor was sort of sticking it to Iowa, and he finishes either a second or first. So let's say he finishes second. That is something he can use as a profile and courage when he goes forward, especially to the South. Let's see if he will say anything that might be, offensive to, voters in some of those states. But, I mean, I think the Cruz-Trump thing is going to be around for a long time. During one of the commercial breaks, I wanted to ask or put this question on the air, because Donald Trump has said at least three times this morning he referred to Ted Cruz as a liar. He's used that term before. That has a lot of dynamite when you call someone a liar. Because he's fighting in a state with a large evangelical base, and Donald Trump is touting the fact that a large percentage of evangelicals are for him, is that a dangerous word to use? Because you're basically saying that this, I think, obviously and truly religious person who is Ted Cruz, you're calling basically an evangelical a liar.
You're breaking a commandment.
Yeah, it seems to me that that's playing with fire.
With any other candidate, perhaps, but not Donald Trump. Look, the guy's been married three times. He's getting a share of the evangelical vote. I don't think he's winning it, but he's getting a share, which shows that those voters are looking beyond that. They're wanting leadership. They're wanting
a winner.
What they see is somebody that will, whatever his theme is, make America great again. A lot of people say, yeah, there's anger, and it's a negative message, but it's also a positive message. And I'm just saying this the way I see it. He's got a positive message because with these people, they feel that America has been on the decline, and he's going to raise America up to what these folks feel it should be, right or wrong. So,
do they like the way in which he has unmercifully ripped him apart over the last couple of weeks? I mean, these were guys that had a bromance for a while, and they went from that bromance to absolutely calling somebody a liar repeatedly in a state where evangelicals are basically saying, do we
How
believe...
How many people has he ripped apart over the last, shown, over the last
liar,
few months?
But liar takes it to a whole different level, I think.
He's shown no limitations on... When Hillary Clinton went after him for being... treating women poorly, he fired right back. I mean,
wisely.
This guy is going to say a lot more things that are going to turn people off. But again, he's speaking for a segment of the population, which I understand and I respect as a political scientist. I may not agree with everything, but I respect it. And people are mad. And again, this group of people, the working class people, have a right to be angry with both parties.
Is, at the moment in time, Donald Trump has the highest negatives of anyone ever running for president since they've been taking that statistic. Is there a realistic way, do you think, that you can, once someone doesn't trust you, can they change their mind and turn around? Is there can you change his favorable ratings?
When I've been in campaigns where your candidate's unfavorables are high, what you do, you make the other candidate's unfavorables that high. To make a choice between two evils or two negatives.
So it would be easy with Hillary because she has unfavorable.
It will be a negative, ugly race. But yeah, that's what will happen.
Now, I want to build off something that you said earlier, Robin, when you were talking about the evangelical voters worrying about that word liar. I spoke earlier about someone I spoke to who had talked about how Trump sticks it to the Democrats. This was one of the voters who I spoke to at a Rick Santorum event. This same voter was asking Rick Santorum, and in fact berating him for not tithing enough to his church.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that evangelical voters, the anger that they may feel at the establishment for not sticking it enough to the Democrats, may actually supersede any sort of religious conviction.
Does Donald Trump get a free ride on anything he says and anything he does?
No.
What can he do?
He's not getting a free ride among everybody. That's the thing. It's a group. It's a group of voters. Again, that's primarily non-college educated, but it cuts across a lot of different areas. Older, whiter, male. Those are some of the characteristics.
We got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont. And our thanks this evening to Robin Johnson and Steve Hexum and Rob Sussman. They're here. They've been terrific. And we will continue from Burlington, Iowa.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
The beauty of Amling's Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling's now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back on Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests this evening have been Robin Johnson and Steve Hexum and Rob Sussman. And again, Robin, thank you very much for reaching out and bringing some of our other guests via phone, Rick Tyler and Sam Clovis, for joining us this evening. And before I run out of time at the end of the broadcast, I do want to say a special thank you to Steve Hexum and to Joe Bates and to Matt Brown and Jerry Carlson and to Colin Bobbitt back in Chicago, Fritz Goldman back in Chicago, and also Brian Troutman here screening our calls with the Beyond the Beltway team. And again, thank you very much for you have bent over backwards. In fact, I think I woke you up on Monday morning, or I sent you a text on Monday morning and said, hey, could we do the show from KBUR next Sunday night? And here we are.
Yeah, well, I thought, you know what, maybe you just want to talk to Robin, and maybe we do a phoner, and maybe we join us in the studio. But, you know, it's great to have the entire show here. I think that I've never seen a closer caucus potential on both the Democrats and the Republicans at the same mm-hmm. time than I see this year.
And I think when we look ahead to October, I think somebody said earlier this is a purple state. I mean, this will be one of the battlegrounds. We'll be back in October to do this again.
I think that's a high probability. What do you think, Robin?
We're down to seven or eight battleground states in mm-hmm. the country, and Iowa's one, Ohio's one. I think this election will be decided in the Midwest. That's why I'm still surprised Walker didn't take off more. It's why Kasich, if he's able to do well in New Hampshire, could be a really strong candidate.
He didn't even try here, did he?
Not really.
He's one of the two candidates that has not visited Southeast Iowa.
Wow. Okay.
Well, the other being Bush.
So he wrote that off. And Bush has not been.
Bush has not been to Southeast Iowa.
Because I think the other thing, which some people would describe as sort of the kiss of death, is that today John Kasich, who is the darling of the national news media, I don't think, and I've said I like him a lot myself. But the kiss of death, he got the endorsement of the New York Times today, and last week he got the Boston Globe. So I guess that maybe help him in a very small segment of New Hampshire. But would you agree that maybe the kiss of death elsewhere for John Kasich?
Yeah, it's not something he'll want to publicize too much in Republican circles, especially in the Midwest and South.
Yeah. For people that just tuned in, this is our last segment. Give us a summary of where you think things come down tomorrow night, Robin.
I think it all depends on turnout. I think if a lot of these first-time voters get out and the turnout's higher, the chances increase that Trump and Sanders win. It's as simple as that. The candidates that are best organized are Clinton and Cruz. A lower turnout probably means they'll be successful. And I say that even though the latest polls show Trump opening up a little bit of a lead over Cruz. My own opinion, I would still predict I think Cruz wins and I think Clinton wins. These races come back to fundamentals. And the fundamentals are that they're the best organized in a state where organization is the key factor.
Steve Hexum.
I think that Bernie Sanders, and I say it before and I said it again, Hillary is still the strongest. She's the one that the preeminent favorite, right? And I think that that Bernie is the guy that's surging right now, and I think that surge, and I know you don't believe in momentum, but I'm saying that surge, I'm seeing it, and it seems, and I think particularly the issue of the single-payer health care plan, it's being very attractive. It's very attractive to an awful lot of people who are very upset with the way that Obamacare has left people.
Tomorrow night, Rob, from a news perspective, where do you think you're going to be getting your first results, and when are you going to get a sense that there may be a trend and momentum going for one candidate.
I think we're going to see it almost immediately after the doors close. I think that the second we start seeing precincts report, I think that's going to, generally speaking, hold true for most of the state. I don't see, of course, certain metropolitan areas are going to have certain differences and so on and so forth from the rural areas. But I think that we're going to see those things very, very early in this situation. And I honestly think we're going to know by 9 o'clock.
Now, Donald Trump is not going to be in the state tomorrow. Do you know who is going to be in the state tomorrow? I mean, in for the last couple of cycles, it is not uncommon for the candidate to be in New Hampshire or someplace
else.
Well,
Donald Trump Jr. will be in Mount Pleasant just down the road. I learned that today. But I know that Carly Fiorina is going to be in the state. I know she's going to be in West Des Moines. I know that I believe that Jeb Bush is going to be in the state. I believe that Rand Paul is going to be in the state.
I believe Bernie and Hillary are both going to be in the state. I have no idea about Martin O'Malley.
This gets back to something you alluded to earlier. Is one of the biggest surprises of this campaign that Rand Paul has not taken off, at least apparently?
Same thing happened to him that happened to Scott Walker, Donald Trump. If you go back to our first poll, it was completely different, those numbers, and that's when Trump first came out. But then after he announced and got going, everything changed. So I think Paul was in a position to capture a lot of that vote. He was on the cover of Time magazine as the most interesting politician of the year. I just think the Trump phenomenon just engulfed a lot of these candidates that just haven't been able to react.
I think the key point here and the last point that I have to really make is that Iowa has not, it doesn't matter so much winning Iowa, but it winnows the field, it narrows the field, it gets rid of all of the people who are not going to be any viable candidates after the while.
Is there anybody, because these are names we're mentioning in the last minute of the show, who were the first to drop out after the results tomorrow night in this state, based on...
I think Huckabee, Santorum, Gilmore's an asterisk anyway. I think Fiorina, I don't see how she can stick around.
Did she ever have anything going here, even after her great debates?
Not really. The numbers never really jumped for her.
However, she came in events. There have been a lot of Fiorina events, and there have been a lot of Fiorina support from people here in Iowa, very deep support with certain groups. But she's been here, but it just hasn't picked up in the numbers.
I think Huckabee is going to be out. I think, obviously, O'Malley is going to be out. I guarantee Santorum is going to be out. I think Rand might stick around. I think Rand may be somebody who's going to he's going to stick around because I think he really wants to stick around.
He'll stay around through at least New Hampshire.
Yeah, I think so. He also then has that decision because he's running for re-election in Kentucky, and he's got to go back and tell the folks in the bluegrass state, yes, I wanted to be president, but I really want to be a senator.
Yes, your senator, yes.
And just think, if there is a President Trump, he's going to be working in a Senate with Ted Cruz will be there, and Marco Rubio will not be there, John McCain, Mitch McConnell. He's going to be working with a lot of people. Ted Cruz, he's going to be working with a lot of people that really don't like him. And he could be the incumbent Republican president. He may have more trouble with Speaker Paul Ryan than he does with Nancy Pelosi. Anyway, just a thought. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks very much. We have a great team this evening. Thank you very much. Good night from Burlington, Iowa.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.